Welcome to the podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. Our podcast weaves together the message and a taste of the music that we experience each Sunday morning as we root our lives in grace through worship here at The Table. More and more people are finding their way to The Table through this podcast, so if you are one of the many, many folks who tune in each week from other parts of California, other parts of our country, or even from other places in the world, we would invite you to take a next step in growing in faith here at The Table. You can do that online at our website, thetableumc.org. There you'll find links to social media and also a way to make a deep commitment to our community to express how you hope to root your life in grace, to grow in faith, to reach in love, and to give generously. If you're one of the many people listening to this but haven't quite walked through the door of the sanctuary yet on a Sunday morning, we would love to welcome you into the beauty of this sanctuary. We gather each Sunday for worship at 9:30 and at 11. Our address is 5265 H Street in East Sacramento.
Lord, I find you in the seeking. Lord, I find you in the doubt, and to know you is to love you, and to know so little else. Oh, how I need you. Oh, how I need you. Oh, how
Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do the people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. Amen.
Have a little faith, I say. Have a little faith, my friend. We've got to help each other through thick and thin. These are trying times that we're living in. Have a little faith, I say. Have a little faith, my friend.
Two weeks ago, David and Callie and Pastor Linda and Amy and a number of us met here, and then we made our way downtown for a vigil that was here in Sacramento that was happening all around the country. It was Standing in Solidarity with Charlotte was what it was called. And the basic idea was that elected officials and religious leaders were going to share reflections on the state of the world and the truth of the violence of white supremacy, and then call us to loving and just ways of being together. And then we were going to meet there at City Hall and then walk together all the way over to the Capitol. And we would have a candlelight vigil, Northern California, 21st century style. Instead of real candles, you had to use fake ones because there are rules against all of these things downtown. So it had all of these things that were happening in the midst of this. And we made our way down there to the City Hall area in the courtyard. And the crowd was filling in as we got there. I think it was like around 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. And the organizers had, you can see there the space, the organizers had just this terrible sound system. And so all of the traditional folks that are there at rallies and protests, religious leaders and politicos, were there to share. So I knew who it was just by barely hearing her voice. It was Rabbi Mona from one of the synagogues here in Sacramento. She was opening, and I think what was a prayer, but the truth was we really couldn't hear her prayer because you just couldn't hear anything with the sound system that was there. So it was one of those moments where you're trying to like reach around somebody to just see and hear what's going on, and you can decipher words here and there. And an organizer came forward to share, and then another pastor spoke. None of us really knew what any of them were saying, but on some level we all felt like we were in this together, and so it was an important place to just try to stand. And then the whole mood started to shift, and at first it was subtle, and I didn't know really what was going on. A man came to the microphone who I kind of looked around. You could see on the agenda that this was Jim Cooper. And trying to like look around the person next to you to figure out what's happening, because this, it's starting to feel like a commotion, right? You're not really sure what's going on. And folks are wondering, like, who is that? Who is he? And then all of a sudden from the edges of the space, some folks started to shout, and they started to yell, and I couldn't really make out what was going on, and it got more confusing really quickly. And so I want to be clear that this was less than 48 hours after a young white man felt, because of his own convictions of God's blessing of him as a white person, that he was justified to drive his vehicle into a group of folks that were standing on the side of God's love for God's diverse people and saying no to white supremacy. And this young man drove a car through there, and in doing so, wounded 19 people, and as we all know, killed Heather Heyer. And so less than 48 hours after that, you're in this confined space, and the energy's coming up, and the drumming is starting. Like, you hear people, you don't see them, at least I didn't at first, but you start to hear the drums from all around you in the space, and it's getting more confusing, and people are like leaning in, who is that? And if you don't know who Jim Cooper is, you're with a lot of the people, at least the people that were around me at that moment. Everybody was asking, and people were trying to give their take in like no time at all on who is Jim Cooper and why is this commotion happening. He's the Democratic Assembly member from Elk Grove. He is one of just 11 African Americans who serve in California State Assembly. And he also is, his background is in law enforcement here in Sacramento. He has been one of the outspoken opponents to rules that many of us have advocated for, that police should wear body cameras. He's been one of the main people to stand in opposition to that for some time now. And so most of the folks, though, at the vigil, like, they didn't really know who he was, or they couldn't see him, or both. And they really didn't know, we didn't know who the counter-protesters were, right? You go to a protest, you're not expecting this to happen. And so the chaos is swirling, and Jim Cooper was at the microphone rebuking the overt violence of white supremacy that we witnessed in Charlottesville. And the counter protesters were raging around the edge of this space about the insidiousness of white racism that is reflected in the kinds of policies that this member of our assembly is advocating for. Can you feel it? Like, can you feel what that could have been like for us? And Mayor Steinberg is the final speaker on the agenda. And he comes to the microphone. And so all of these folks who came out to try to stand in solidarity with Charlottesville found ourselves standing in the middle of the courtyard at City Hall with establishment religious leaders and elected officials trying to rebuke the overtness of white supremacy, and this collection of pretty well-organized protesters kind of a combination of different groups, a coalition of folks from Black Lives Matter and from homeless activists here in Sacramento, saying no to the insidiousness of racism that's not just in Charlottesville, but is here in Sacramento too. And so the confusion was deep. It was for me in that space. And it feels like it crystallizes what so many of us are waking up every morning and going to sleep at night trying to make sense of. Like, what does it really mean for me to stand in solidarity at this particular moment? And finding clarity is essential if we're going to find courage to stand with God for love and healing and justice. And so folks are looking around, like, who is at the microphone? Who is drumming? Who is that's raging behind that mask? And what does solidarity mean? And on some level, I think we're uncomfortable because we're asking, like, why am I here? Why are these other folks here? And what do I think about all of this? And that night echoes so much of the reading that Chris just shared for us this morning. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, what I imagine is that the sun is setting and folks are gathering there at their version of City Hall, and tensions are high. And the location is not an accident. Caesarea Philippi. This is a town named after Caesar. So they are walking into a district that is named after empire, after the ruler. It's not unlike gathering there at City Hall by candlelight to walk to the Capitol. And Caesarea Philippi, lots of us don't know this, but it's at the edge of what was called the Northern Kingdom of Israel. Not unlike Charlottesville is at the northern edge of what not very long ago were the Confederate States. And Caesarea Philippi was originally called Panias. It's named after a god, Pan, the god of revelry and wild. Linda and 60,000 people are out there with the god of revelry and wild right now, Burning Man, right? And that was the space that this was named after. So it's both Caesar ruling over this and these ancient gods that are still, like, this might sound familiar. You go into this space and there are monuments to this god of Pan that Jesus would have been walking right past. And this city was overtly and clearly pro-Rome. Caesar's name is hanging over the city, kind of like white supremacy is hanging over the city of Charlottesville, or white racism is hanging over even the capital of California, Sacramento. And it's in that moment that Jesus asked his disciples, who do people say that I am? And they said, some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, one of the prophets. What I imagine is that first person, Jesus asked the question, who do they say the Son of Man is? And that first person comes to the microphone, and you don't know what they said because they didn't have a good sound system. So you just start waiting, like, who do they say the Son of Man is? And then all of a sudden, like from the edge, while you're trying to like move around to figure out what somebody's answering Jesus, you hear from the edge, he's John the Baptist. And as soon as somebody gets done saying he's John the Baptist, you hear the drums and somebody on the side is like, Elijah. And then everybody over in the other corner is chanting together that it's Jeremiah. And you're trying to just like, who are these people? Who's answering all of this? See, you haven't been to City Hall very much. You don't really know the courtyard. So you're trying to get your bearings. You haven't been there to Caesarea Philippi, so you're not quite sure who all these people are and what they're saying about the Son of Man. And folks are yelling from the edge, and as that chaos whips, Jesus says, who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? And time stands still. Because the spotlight goes from you trying to figure out what everybody around you is saying to you. Who do you say Jesus is? See, it's not about the folks yelling. It's not about them at all. Not at this moment. It's about you. Who do you believe Jesus is, and what does it matter? Well, Simon Peter answers for everybody there. He says, Jesus, you're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And I wish that I always had that kind of clarity and conviction. I wish that as all those things were swirling around, that I could have been the one to like take the mic and just like name it at that moment. As the tensions are rising and my attention is going in all these different directions and I'm trying to make sense of it, I wish that Simon Peter's testimony there in Caesarea Philippi would always be mine. And for a long time, that's actually what I thought grace was. I thought grace was what Simon Peter communicated at that moment for all of us. And I thought grace was something that I needed to find for myself, not just some of the time, but all of the time. I would listen to friends, and they would share some of their stories, even strangers. They would share some of their stories, and they would express with clarity and conviction and what felt to me like absolute certainty. And they knew Jesus, and I wanted to have that same kind of clarity. And it seemed clear that they'd found grace and that I wanted that in the same way. And I wanted to tell my story, like in my head and in my heart and in my soul. And I wanted it to always have that kind of precision and certainty and never waver. And in my mind at that point, grace was really all about me getting Jesus right. That's what I thought grace was for a long part of my life. Not always consciously. I could say the right confession or I could stand there, but underneath going with me was this, I need to get this right, always. And if I couldn't do that, then I wasn't really Christian. I wasn't a real Christian. It's like I took this one singular moment in Peter's life, these few seconds, and I said, That moment needs to be what my entire life looks and feels like with absolute certainty all of the time. And if it doesn't, then I can't be an adequate follower of Jesus. I'm not going to find grace. I won't have it in my life. It's not good enough. That was operating for a long time with me. Grace wasn't like a cairn. This is a cairn. Between worship, we had several of the 2 and 3-year-olds who are trying to figure out what this is. It's like when you're out on a trail, for those of you that go hiking in places, you see these to kind of point you in the right direction. That's what a cairn is. So you're found on the journey by somebody who's gone before you because they're helping you to find your way. Grace wasn't a cairn for me. Grace was something that I needed to have. It was about me getting it right always. It wasn't something that would, it certainly wasn't just a witness of God's unfathomable and fierce compassion and love, like these last 3 weeks that we've been working on what it means to be found by God. Grace wasn't like what Pastor Linda shared about a couple weeks ago. She was sharing how she was out with her family on a boat in Lake Tahoe. And this wasn't what I thought grace was. She shared about being on that boat, and she thought it was about her saving her family. But what actually happened was that her child, who's on the autism spectrum, led her family as the hail started crashing down on them in the boat, led them to come together and then to go and find a stranger and to build a relationship with a stranger, and then to be in it together in the midst of a storm until peace came again. That didn't feel like grace to me. That felt like she wasn't doing her job as a mom. That wasn't grace. And then grace wasn't like what Pastor Chris shared about last week, of going into a community of faith that he loved and finding himself on the floor weeping because this is a community that told him that his sexual orientation is a barrier to God's love, and what he felt was God's abundant yes to who he was, not in spite of it, but because of who he was. That didn't feel like grace to me because it didn't stay with him. He still had doubts and worries and wonderings after that. So it can't be grace if you didn't like keep hold of it. That was just like a moment. I assume that grace was what Peter communicated with absolute certainty there in Caesarea Philippi. You're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. But I never really allowed myself to pay attention to what's happening after this. Because right after this, there's this blessing. And the blessing is, Jesus answers Peter, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven." See, for a long time, what I assumed was that Jesus is blessing Peter here because Peter's right. That's what the blessing is for. Like, Peter won. He got it right. He got the answer. Grace was about Peter's correctness, right? And it's kind of absurd, and I need to confess that it feels embarrassing to say it out loud to folks at this moment, but I was missing the point. Almost as badly, I would say, as Peter missed the point for pretty much his whole life. It's like I took that one moment of Peter's life and said, that's the only way God blesses you, is if you get that right. And then everything else, you're off. And in that moment, what happens there is Jesus is not saying, blessed are you, Peter, because you've got it figured out. Jesus wasn't saying, blessed are you, Peter, because you're like the perfect disciple, the one I've always been imagining. It's the opposite of that. It's the opposite of what I've worked up in my mind for a long time. Jesus wasn't really blessing Peter at all, to be honest. Jesus was blessing the words that fell out of Peter's mouth, the testimony. And Jesus must have just been like, finally, Peter gets it. This is my moment to say, on that, I'm going to build the church. Jesus probably knew Peter wasn't going to keep getting it. And I want to be clear about this, because right before this same Peter was saying to Jesus, if you're Jesus, call me out on the water. Does that sound like pretty strong doubt? It does to me. And then a couple lines from now, Peter is going to be rebuking, calling Jesus Satan. That's pretty much missing the mark, if you could find it, right? And then at the end of this, Peter is famously going to deny Jesus, not once, not twice, three times. And then Peter is going to go like first century Antifa or Antifa. He's going to grab his sword and he's like, I'm coming to your rescue, Jesus. And Jesus is like, put that down. Have you not understood anything that I've been working with you on? Like, do you remember the testimony that you gave at that moment? And the truth was that Peter didn't. But what I assumed over and over and over was that if I didn't live the entirety of my life in that 12-second version of Peter's, then I didn't really ever find grace. And this, is, friends, is upside down. See, because Peter forgets in the Garden of Gethsemane just as quickly as he blurts it out there in Caesarea Philippi. And Jesus says, though, I tell you, you're Peter. And the Greek word for Peter is petros, or rock, like small. I used to think boulder. Peter, boulder. But it's really like pebbles. Like it's rocks stacked up on top of each other to show you the way. It's a cairn. So Peter, rock, rocks. On this I will build my church. And the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. And I'll give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Like, why would Jesus give the keys of the kingdom to such an unstable human being? Like, what is going on with Jesus where he's like, going in with you, Peter? That seems like a terrible idea. Just terrible. See, clearly, it's not Peter's authority based on his getting it right all the time. It's not the keys to the kingdom of heaven because Peter is always righteous and knows how to be in those ways. Instead, Jesus builds God's church on that testimony that fell out of that rock's mouth right there underneath the banner of Caesar. And that testimony was that what I've experienced in you, Jesus, is that you're the Messiah. Not me. You're the Messiah. The one that has been sent to us as a gateway or as a cairn to show us the way to the kingdom of God. Not this otherworldly kingdom, but a kingdom that is going to be right here on earth. And the banner of Caesar is going to fade away, and the love of God is going to be what guides this space. The rock or the cairn is not so much Peter as it is those words. Jesus, you're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. There's a pastor in Minneapolis, Jin S. Kim, and he says, this is what grants us the keys of the kingdom of heaven to bind and to loose on earth. God relates to the church not as a coercive ruler, but as a loving parent who entrusts to this fragile and immature child, Peter, me, you, the power to do right and to do wrong, to be faithful and to drift away. And we don't have to look long, friends, at the history of Christianity to recognize how vulnerable we are to getting this all wrong. Like Peter, we tend to deny Jesus. And we sometimes rise up with versions of our own sword, and we become the thing that we most loathe ourselves. And even in this fragile and immature Peter, Jesus sees a beloved child of God and said, God's going to go in with you, all in with you, with what you've just uttered. Not because you got it right or because of your own righteousness, but because those words, that testimony, that changes the world. And like Peter, we don't always understand it. Even when we're the ones saying it, we don't always get it. And thus we keep coming back to Jesus' question and asking ourselves, who do we say Jesus is? And thankfully, we have people around us who are in this with us. And we have this cairn called the gospel that shows us toward that gateway of Jesus' kingdom, love, that is taking down Caesar's ways and building up the way of healing and hope. And so it's no wonder in the midst of all that to me that Jesus says to them, he sternly orders the disciples, do not say anything to anyone about me as the Messiah. His language is, do not tell anyone that he's the Messiah. See, sometimes we need space and time and practice to let the depths of this really rise within us, to figure out what this really is that Jesus is saying to us. And that time to let this rise, that's grace too. That's God saying, I'm in this with you. God building God's church within us, and sometimes in spite of us, even when we can't be trusted to say the right words or do the right thing. And that's partly what happened for me that night. We were walking with others in confusion and tension there at City Hall. And it built and it grew. And as we were getting ready to go towards the steps of the Capitol, our Jewish mayor, Daryl Steinberg, was sharing from the microphone. He was denouncing the overtness of white supremacy. And what better person for me to listen to denounce that, than a Jewish man from right here who's trying to lead us and knows in the depths of his being just how harmful evil can be. And I believe what he was doing was what Jesus was talking about. He was honestly trying to bind the horrors of evil and to help us work together to do just that. And as he was speaking, homeless activists and others that represent this coalition of this movement, they're defiantly pounding drums. Because what they're trying to do is to loose the policies and procedures that we have in place right here, not far away, but right here, that cause deep harm to people of color in our own communities. And the truth is that binding and loosing on earth as in heaven is messy. And it wasn't entirely clear where the keys to the kingdom of heaven were really calling us. I wasn't certain where the cairn was really like pointing us, where God needed us to go, the living God needed us to go. And thankfully, somebody that's way more faithful than me took a microphone and they started to sing Amazing Grace. And then for like just a moment, for just a moment, everything kind of came into clarity. And our attention went back into this vigil. And it was awkward and challenging. It wasn't like pristine. It was still mixed up. And for a moment, what I felt was that we're in this together. We have a different image of ways that we need to go. Two sides of the same coin, trying to name the overtness of white supremacy and then also recognize complicity in white racism here. And we're asking ourselves, what matters most? What does the living God need from all of us right now? And I was asking amidst all those folks, who do I say Jesus is? And what difference does that make? And friends, that moment is grace. That's God meeting me and us in the midst of our everyday life and saying, this matters. I'm entrusting to you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. To you, you're often misguided, and the other folks around you, they are too. And upon the testimony of Peter, who was misguided in his own way, on those rocks, I am going to build the church. And we finished singing Amazing Grace, and some of us chose to walk silently with our fake candles toward the Capitol. And what I believe we were trying to do was to bind with reverence the life of Heather Heyer that was taken by that young white man in that car. We're trying to bind it to all of us so we could feel God's love in that. And then other folks, the counter-protesters among us, they kept with the drums and they were raising their voices because they needed to loose the commitments to racial justice, not far away, but right here in our own lives. And Heather Heyer, I think, was calling us to all of those things. She posted not long before her life was taken that if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. And then her mom somehow stood before the world a couple days after her death and said, they tried to kill my daughter to shut her up, and they've just magnified her. And all those folks out there, on some level, I think we're trying to figure out, God is going to keep magnifying this truth of this young woman's life. God is going to keep magnifying. And how are we going to join God in that? What is our role? What is our place? It's like around us, the spotlight goes from them to you, to me. Right next to me there, as we finally got to the Capitol, was this young woman who had a drum. It came up like to her shoulders. It was huge. She was standing next to me, and she had a mask on. And I couldn't see the person that was trying to speak at the microphone around her. But she starts to drum. So the person in the microphone is trying to name for us how deeply God needs us to stand against white supremacy. And she's trying to bang on the drum to say, it's not just out there, it's in you too, it's in here. And this moment of grace happens for me. As I'm standing there and confessing, like I'm like Peter all the rest of his life, not in that moment of clarity. And this woman who has been in my image, She's been in the movement since before I was born. And she comes forward, and her expression of gender in like every dominant culture place, like this is a person who doesn't count, like she's not, she doesn't fit. And she comes to this moment, and she's with the drummer, and the drummer is banging, and she's like eye to eye with her. And for a moment, they're like paused together, and they're like seeing each other as beloved children of God. And friends, like, we need that moment right now. That was when grace found me. I used to think it was about me having the right words and telling people with absolute certainty what it was. But the truth is, God is going to work in spite of me sometimes, and then I'm going to have a choice. Like, can I find my own drum? Or can I stand next to that woman with all of her grace and say, you are calling us to really deep, important things. And we all need to find a way to be in this together. And God needs that for us. God needs that from us. Because the truth is, the church has lost its way for a lot of generations. And if we don't find a way to give voice right now to the abundant love of God, friends, then the loudness of the voices of hate are going to continue to be the ones that speak in Jesus' name. And so God needs the spotlight to go from around us to on us. And then we need to do some soul searching. Who do we say Jesus is? And in that, may we find both the rhythm of God's drumming and the depth of God's grace. Amen.
There's evil all around us. Gotta fight the good fight. In that war with love. Hold on, hold on. Help is on the way. There's a better tomorrow. I can feel today.
Have a little faith, I say. Have a little faith, my friend. We got to help each other do the thinking thing. These are trying times that we're living in. Have a little faith, I say. Have a little faith, my friend.
Have a little faith. Just a little bit of faith.